Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
Going on. It's me, it's Karina Reichman, and I'm thrilled to be back here this week with a brand new episode of Inappropriate Happiness, and of course, I'm joined by my mainest dude. We're not together in the same room, but we are bonded by almost blood. It is my friend Isaac Sloan. How are you doing, pal? What is going on?
Come on, Karina, I am amplified.
Yeah, you are. You are beyond amplified, and I am too. I feel like this is good. This is good. It's top of the week. I mean, it's Tuesday. We're recording this for those of you listening, but it feels fresh. It feels good. It feels like it's almost like the end of August where things really slow down, you know, in the music world, in the world, you know, and whatever, and it's this nice lazy sort of summer feeling I'm starting to feel creeping in. What about you? What are you feeling, dude?
You know, we are 5 days out of what's known as the dog days of summer. Things are starting to cool down in one way, and also just heat up in another.
Dude, fucking A right. That's why we keep coming to this guy for the wisdom like that. The dog days are a real thing. I just thought that was just a turn of phrase, really.
They are, yeah. They refer to the kind of heat wave that we experienced, I believe.
Ah, dude.
Time in the summer when it is just the hottest, and it, you know, it runs from mid-July to, August 11th is when it ends.
You see, I didn't even know. I didn't even know. This is great. Well, we're past the dog days in that regard, and it's just a beautiful time. It's great. And here in the city, it sort of feels like an empty-ish New York, which is so interesting. I think everybody just, you know, has gotten out of Dodge or, are, you know, getting out of Dodge, which is funny. Like, when you walk the streets, it's palpably less crowded. And, you know, it's much more beautiful weather than we had when it was the dog days of summer, when it was 100 degrees every day. Now we're rocking a nice high 82, low 72. It's kind of a sweet spot. So interesting to see. What the hell, Isaac? We've seen so much live music, so many things going on. I feel like now it's like, you know, everybody's cramming it in. Their announces,
right.
Tour dates, whatnot, before sort of like the last week of August / Labor Day quasi lull, I feel like.
I think that's right. I think that's right. You know, I closed out my dog days of summer with a Jimmy Buffett concert on Jones Beach last Tuesday, actually, after we taped our episode. And
how the hell, dude? How was it?
You know, I think last episode I talked about when I go into shows as a kind of anthropological experience, and this was certainly one of those, and I really did spend many moments throughout the concert thinking, how am I going to explain this on the podcast? But I'm going to keep it brief. This was my second Jimmy Buffett concert, 10 years apart, almost to the day, at the same venue, the Jones Beach Amphitheater. And You know what I noticed most about this show? People talk about the parrot heads. People talk about the Jimmy Buffett brand. But the guy's catalog is very kind of intricate in ways I didn't anticipate. You know, he has the like traditional Jimmy Buffett, what you think of his music sounding like, kind of by the beach, simple, you know, fun, those tunes. And then he has like New Orleans style tunes where he'll be like, let's head down to New Orleans. And like you'll hear that kind of quintessential New Orleans piano kick in, and the lyrical content will relate to something about the bayou. And then he also has like heartland, United States, blue eyes, soul, kind of John Mellencamp tunes.
Oh my and God.
So, you know, the concert is a real sort of tour through these different styles the man has explored over the years. And I have to say, I was pretty pretty engaged and interested in the whole thing.
Wow. I mean, and did you, I mean, that's actually fascinating. All bullshit aside.
That's what I thought. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And, but like as a pure enjoyment level, are you there and you're like, holy shit, this is really good or not even good, like enjoyable. You know what I mean? Are you dancing? Are you grooving? Are you having a nice night out on Jones Beach? Or is it more, you know, you're looking at it like, you know, with through some sort of lens where you're trying to like understand it. And, or maybe some combination of the two. What's the vibe, you know, for you personally, you're there.
I have to say it was a combination of the two.
Sure.
You know, I imagine if it is something that you really love, and there are certainly a lot of people in the audience who have seen him far more than I have and know more of his music than I do. They seem to be having a grand old time. For me, it didn't really sink into a place where I could really let loose. Although it was the anniversary of Jerry's passing, and they encored with Jimmy Buffett's arrangement of Scarlet Begonias. And let me tell you, Karina, got a little inappropriately happy for that one.
I expect nothing less. And for the record, you took a short video of this, posted on Twitter, and it has more views than anything has ever had views. Is that correct?
It does have, you know, quite a few views and I think like over 1,300 likes or hearts on Twitter. And as someone who's new to you know, posting on Twitter, this was pretty shocking for me. And a lot of people actually, some pretty snarky things to say about the audience who they felt wasn't quite embracing the music the way that they're used to, you know, seeing at a Phish show or a Dead show. And, you know, looking at it, I can see that that's true. But I also think we have to remember that it was the end of a night. It was a cover song. And, you know, everybody, every sort of musical community embraces things in a different way. So, but,
that's,
you know,
very diplomatic
point
of you
taken,
as a...
point taken. I get it. Yeah. People looked a little sleepy.
A little stoic, a little sleepy, a little stoic. For the record, I just looked it up. This video that Isaac posted on Twitter has 47,000 views, which is, Isaac, I will out you. You are not a social media guy. You are late to the Twitter game. You very much, we all envy the way that you have been able to pry yourself off of all of these soul-trapping, horrendous platforms that I just can't seem to pry myself from. But, you know, welcome to Twitter. You post a 13-second clip of, you know, Jimmy Buffett playing Scarlet Begonias. Next thing you know, every parrot head and Deadhead on the internet has something to say about it. 47,000 people.
Well, you know, he's played this tune before, and he does. He usually says, "Where parrot heads meet deadheads," as a way of introducing the song. And also, he you know, covers the Phish song "Gumbo" on a compilation of Phish covers,
which is the best.
You know,
oh my god. And instead of saying, you know, it's chaise roulette. Right? Like,
yes,
in the Phish version, they pronounce it that way.
Yeah.
He goes, "Chez Roulet," which
right,
I Chez love.
Chez Roulet, yeah.
Chez Roulet, that's the best element to that, you know? Fucking, we are big fans. I mean, I'm a big gumbo fan in general. The food, the Phish version, the Jimmy Buffett version, it's all gravy to me, if you will. But that's amazing, dude. Way to really just truck it back to Jones Beach for, you know, some parrot head bullshit. This is fantastic. I have never seen Jimmy Buffett, but I do also sort of love him from afar, you know, and I feel like I know more Jimmy Buffett songs than the average, you know, sort of thick-headed New Yorker. I don't know.
You know, once but, every 10 years, little Jimmy Buffett on the water on a Tuesday night. Not the worst thing.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And you and I also, for the record, just catching up on the live music that we have seen in the last week. There was a five-night run like no other that took place at Madison Square Garden last week, which was Rage Against the Machine with Run the Jewels opening. I caught the show on the Tuesday. Isaac, you caught the show on the Friday, correct?
Correct, yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't want to dwell too much on this because, you know, I feel like I could go all day. But for me, just, you know, personally speaking, this was, you know, one of those things where, like, you know, I go on tour a lot, I'm away a lot, you know, now I can't really, you know, back in high school, middle school, whatever, I definitely would structure my life much more around, like, the concerts I wanted to see in the city, you know, but these days, it's like, oh, I'm gonna be away, thank God I was here to witness a night of that, you know, back. It really reminded me, like, when I first started playing guitar, first started playing bass, like first got interested in, you know, heavier music, which happened earlier for me, like this did it for me on every level, you know, and the way I know every word to every Rage song, every riff, you know, every nuance, all that shit, every instrument, you know, I feel like all of my bands and, you know, with just friends growing up, like those were the songs we covered, you know, among other things, of course, but like, I can't even tell you how many Rage songs, like, you know, late middle school, like, and through high school, like my bands would just, you know, get in a fucking rehearsal space and play them, you know, and it was beyond cathartic. It was beyond, like, you know, I don't know, I've definitely seen MSG pop off before, but that felt like a whole new energy. And of course Zach De La Roca, like, you know, he screwed up his leg in the early portion of the tour and he could not stand, so they carry him out basically and he sits in a chair the whole time, and then they carry him back out, and it's just the, like, you know, of course, if he was running around like a madman like he usually does, that would be a different thing, but there was something so, like, moving or something to me about watching, you know, that guy who's, you know, his words, his band, those records, they are so impactful for so many. And I think, you know, I said it last week or whenever, like, the it's a message we need now more than ever, really. And he, you know, just delivering it in this, you know, half crippled way and then triumphantly getting carried off the stage, like, I don't know, there was something so powerful about it. I fucking loved the entire show. It was absolutely incredible. I would travel anywhere in the world to go see it. I'm inappropriately happy about it. And of course, you know, I was absolutely going ballistic in my section. I had a lot of people filming me with their, like, lights on their phones, and, you know, I've been known to do that before, but I think I might have reached a new high of, like, you know, oh shit, this girl's out of control, what's gonna happen, which was really great. And I had the best time ever. I couldn't say enough good things about it. I really love Run the Jewels as well. I've seen, that was, I think, my third Run the Jewels show, and I am a huge fan. What a pairing. All of this, like, you know, it does it for me. So that I'm inappropriately happy about, Isaac.
Well, anyone who thought the Jimmy Buffett audience looked stoic would have definitely appreciated the crowd at Rage Against the Machine. I mean, it was a vibe in Madison Square Garden that I have not seen at too many other shows. I mean, Fish, you get something similar but different. And this really They blew me away, and I don't have the kind of history with them that you do. I don't know every word to every song. I know some of their catalog, and I'm certainly, you know, privy to what they're up to and have long admired them, but have not done a deep dive, which I really realize now they really deserve that. But I went because, out of interest, and, obviously they've been influential in all kinds of ways, but I didn't expect quite the live show that they delivered, and was really I walked away from it just feeling like it was one of the better shows I've ever seen. So on the other side of that, I will be doing a deeper dive, and please go see the show if you can, and you're listening. Karina and I, when we can't see the local show, we often refer to the show we do catch as the Strange Date, because which is a very New York City centric elitist way of looking at it.
There's a strange date.
But it was a strange date. It'd be like in some, smaller town on a, weeknight instead of Friday at Madison Square Garden. It would be our strange date, show. And I love, by the way, love nothing more than a strange date with Rage Against the Machine or any other band for that matter.
Amen. Amen. No, you got to hit a strange
gotta
date.
Got to hit
you
a strange date. Yeah. Speaking of strange dates, I attended for the, second consecutive year, the Catskill Mountain Jubilee in East Durham, New York, this Sunday, to catch two sets of one of my favorite bands, the Disco Biscuits. And Karina, you played this festival last year. I attended then and again this year, and there's few places that I've been to like the Catskill Mountain Jubilee. And for our listeners, I don't even think there are words I can use to describe the free-for-all, complete wookery, or I don't even, like, I hesitate to call it wookery, because it's really just people throwing down and having a fabulous old time in the middle of the woods.
Right.
But that's an environment that I've always longed to see the Disco Biscuits in, and was glad to see them for two sets, one when the sun was fully out and the other when the sun was setting. And they played great, and a lot of new tunes. They have a song called Twisted in the Road coming out this Friday on streaming services. They played it live on Sunday, and I've also gotten a little sneak preview of the studio version, and it is one of their best studio recordings ever. So look for that. And Karina, you have some exciting Disco Biscuits news as well.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, first of all, I am so upset that I missed the Catskill Mountain Jubilee, because, and the way you describe it, Isaac, it's really, there's something, I play a lot of these sort of smaller, in the woods kind of bizarre festivals. Like, I've definitely done all of that. There's something about the Catskill Mountain Jubilee that's just intangibly great. I'm so glad that you were there. Last year was super fun. I got to play. And then, we had a grand old time then. It sounds like you had a grand old time. And yes, the good old Disco Biscuits. What do you say about a band like them, huh? First of all, before I get into the really, really exciting news, I will say that John Barber, guitar player of the Disco Biscuits, he has a podcast much like this one called Touchdowns All Day. And Touchdowns All Day, the lore of all of this was really fascinating, because, I recorded an episode of Touchdowns All Day with Barber in May 2020. Right? Different world, different KR, things are different, right? And, next thing you know, it's January 2022, and there's been no release of my episode of Touchdowns All Day. So I don't know. I just had the thought to holler at John, and I was like, yo, should we do a new one of these, for 2022? That old one is ancient history, because, of course, literally we were on lockdown. Things were very, very different, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, totally. So what ends up happening is we record, a 2022 episode featuring yours truly on Touchdowns All Day. in May of 2022. And then, you know, this is a real nail biter. I'm just like, you know, I'm like, wow, I wonder when these podcasts are going to get released. But they have the thought, John and Crunk Mike, who is the gentleman who kind of facilitates all of this. And, you know, Crunk Mike basically had the concept. It's like a time capsule episode where basically, you know, they released at the same time my 2020 interview and my 2022 interview. Really some forward-thinking stuff, emblematic of just how out there and spectacular the Disco Biscuits really are. And that brings me to my next point, which, by the way, that got released, you know, August 14th. So we're looking at two consecutive Mays, and then the episode gets dropped in August of 2022. Unbelievable stuff. Great times. Love chatting with Barber. Love all of the Disco Biscuits. They are my pals. And that is why they invited me, Isaac, to play with them in Iceland. Oh, baby. At their destination event. It's called Transatlantic. Oh, yeah. And it is taking place at really one of the most beautiful looking concert halls I've ever seen, albeit on the internet. I have not been there in person yet. But yeah, my band's going to open for them. They have three unique openers on three different nights. It's Cloud Chord. And then night two, I believe, is Dogs in a Pile. And then it's me and my band. And all of us, you know, openers are going to be able to do late nights as well while we're there. And I'm just touched, tickled pink. I can't believe they thought of me to do this. And, you know, that it all worked out. And I have always wanted to go to Iceland. And now I get to go because the Disco Biscuits are taking me, which is really great. I'm so thrilled. And Isaac, you are coming along in tow as well. Just think of the possibilities for the pod.
Oh, my God. I am so the thought of seeing you open for the Disco Biscuits in the Harpa Concert Hall and then playing a set with your band until the wee hours under the Northern Lights in a club in Iceland. It's just beyond words thrilling. And I think there, you know, hijinks will likely ensue and there will be a lot of musical moments other kinds of experiences to put language to on this very podcast.
Oh my Lord. I mean, big time. What a bizarre and incredible concept, going to Reykjavik with the Disco Biscuits. I
Speaking
can't wait.
Of international musical experiences.
Yes, sir.
You were just in Toronto and you caught one of the last nights of Phish's summer tour.
Oh, Isaac, you're so right. You know, it's a great, great point. Yeah, you know, I have family in Toronto, my mom's brother and his beautiful wife and their four children, my cousins, my first cousins, they all live there. And I spent, you know, up until, you know, my grandfather died when I was like 13. But up until then, I went to Toronto like 4 to 6 times a year, you know, and I remember spending like 6 weeks of my summer out there kind of every year as a kid. Like that was definitely like when people ask me, like, where's your family? I'm like, Toronto, you know. My mom fled when she was like 26 or 27, came to New York City, never looked back. But she is the outlier in the family. So it's always fun to go there and just see my family and whatnot. And of course, I mean, how could you not tie in? You know, it's a family visit trip, of course, but Phish happens to be playing. Are these things intrinsically linked? Yes, they are. So we had to go and structure the trip. You know, we went Wednesday, which is when Phish played, and came back Monday morning. It was a great time. I took my eldest cousin, Daniel, to his first Phish show, which was phenomenal. And, you know, honestly, I thought it was a really good introduction to Phish. You know, it was very jukeboxy in terms of, like, you know, you're hearing Bouncing Around the Room, you're hearing Free, you're hearing Sample in a Jar, and even, you know, some, I find, you know, hearing 2001 and Sand and Stash, like these are all, you know, in my head, Phish staples, you know? So I was really glad that my cousin got to experience kind of those, you know, gems in the Phish catalog at his first show. A lot of really good stuff. There was Sneaking Sally. I mean, it was a really, really great night of music. And thrilled to have been able to catch my last Phish Show summer tour. They then went on to close it all out at Alpine for 3 nights, which, I mean, man, I've never been to Alpine. The lawn being so steep, I'm seeing photographs, I'm seeing memes. It's all, that's just wild, you know? And Alpine is like 2 or 3 times the size of like one of your normal quote unquote Phish amphitheaters, correct? Like it holds like well over 30,000 people. Crazy looking shed. I mean, insane. And of course, looked like they had a hell of a time there. And now Phish Tour is over. I mean, we have Dix in about, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever it is. And then, but there's very exciting news here, Isaac, which, you know, we've sort of known about for a hot minute, knew was going to break the internet. And literally we're recording this podcast, you know, not 30 minutes after it actually got announced. So I feel like I don't know exactly how broken the internet is quite yet. But Tab, the Trey Anastasio band, and Goose are combining forces, and they are going on tour together, baby, and they're playing, talk about some strange dates, I only say that just because, you know, no real major cities, you know, it's not like they're doing New York, Boston, Philly, blah, 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 blah. It's, this starts on November 9th. It's Portland, Maine, Lowell, Massachusetts, Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, Glens Falls, New York. Wow. What the hell?
Carnot Moon, Pennsylvania.
Carnot Moon? Is that what I'm saying?
I believe it's near Pittsburgh.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Amazing. Amazing. I saw some weird thing. Fairfax, Virginia, Syracuse, and Reading, Pennsylvania from November 9th through November 19th. And they say that we can expect full sets from both bands and, of course, some unique collaborations along the way.
I believe it's a full collaborative set. It's a full collaborative set.
Is it?
Yeah. It's going to be a set of each band and then a set together.
Really? Is that what they said?
That's what they said.
That's so wild. Come on with it. That is just crazy.
I mean, if there's anything I like more than a strange date, it is a strange date that I can wear a hoodie to. I am a big proponent of Fall Tour. And this really just has my number with the, you know, out of major cities in small arenas with hoodie weather. I mean, and Goose and Trey Band. It's like...
Seems great. Seems
really
like everything we want.
Got my number.
100%. And of course, so excited for Goose as always. It's just, you know, that's a really beautiful thing to be tapped by somebody you admire so much and go on a co-headlining fall tour together. It's fantastic. And I know Trey feels the same way about them. It's like everybody sort of, it's like a beautiful symbiosis of like, you know, the young guys getting to play with somebody they super admire and Trey really feeling strongly about this young, incredible band that's just making insane waves for themselves and, you know, absolutely trailblazing a path of their own. So I think this is a fantastic thing. I know we will hit at least one of these shows, Isaac. I really look forward to it. And may the internet be as broken gets. Let's go. It's that's what I would refer to as hot goss, where goss is short for gossip. That is just some hot goss. It's been difficult for the last few months to keep that one under wraps. But here we go, man. Here we go. Tab and Goose. Great, great fall tour. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of traveling for these shows will ensue from around the country. I think this is, it's really cool. And honestly, it brings tourism to these sort of smaller, not major cities, you know? So very, very cool. Congrats to both Trey and Goose. Woo! Let's go.
The Glen Falls Civic Center is where Phish played Halloween in 94 and did the White Album. And that is a place that I have been pining to go to for quite some time. I don't know if I'm going to get to this show, but they have very few concerts there. And I don't know, that venue holds a kind of mystique in my mind. You know, you may say the Gorge, you may say Alpine Valley, but I kind of have my eyes set on checking out the Glen Falls Civic Center.
I love that. You know, Shoreline, Red Rocks. Yeah. No. The Glens Falls Civic Center. I think that's super fantastic. Stoked for everybody involved. This is fantastic. Isaac, what the hell? Have we reached the end of our road here?
Unless you want to talk about the South Park 25th anniversary concert.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, what can you say about the South Park 25th anniversary concert? Except I really believe, I feel like I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't experience FOMO. It's not a feeling I ever get. I always really intrinsically feel like I am wherever I need to be. Truly. This was maybe, I really think I experienced FOMO for the first time in my life with this. I really do. And then as soon as, you know, this is my favorite, you know, Isaac, you know how much I love South Park.
Totally. South Park. Actually talk about it on Touchdowns All Day.
Dude, amazing. You see, yeah. Isaac's listened to Touchdowns All Day. I have not. I just have, I have no idea with what I said in either interview, but that's great. No, I'm such a huge South Park fan since fifth grade. I started watching it and it just completely, like, I mean, it's my favorite thing. Literally, it's the most stabilizing thing when you're on tour. The thing you can count on the most is that you are going to get back to your hotel room at the end of the night and South Park will be on Comedy Central on that good old hotel TV, which there's really just nothing like taking a bath in a shitty hotel and then getting into that terrible bed, turning on a little South Park. Really does it for me. Anyway, love the show. Honestly, Primus and Ween, I mean, Ween really is quite literally my favorite band of all time. One of several, but, you know, whatever. And Primus is right up there, too. So off the bat, I'm just drooling. I'm dead. Absolutely destroyed. And then they bring out Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson to Red Rocks. And they're playing all these South Park songs. They're playing Closer to the Heart. They're doing all the... I'm overly emotional about this, Isaac. I really feel like I felt FOMO for the first time. And I just am seeing, you know, the way they set up the Red Rocks Park and Amphitheater to have all of these sort of South Park little, you know, places that you could pose for your picture and like different very deep references to, you know, shit that's happened on the show and everybody just, you know, celebrating and, you know, the confluence of humor and music is, you know, something I really enjoy. And I think this was, you know, maybe the most emblematic show of that maybe ever. So yes, I am wildly sad I missed it. It looked absolutely incredible. I think, you know, you're a huge South Park fan too, Isaac. We would have really loved this.
We would have loved this. I mean, I watched some of it. It was on Comedy Central, and I believe it's streaming for free online. You can watch a pro shot video. But Matt Stone and Trey Parker, the two creators of South Park, are just wildly talented. And you can really see that in all of these different crazy ways with, you know, Matt Stone playing drums with Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson of Rush on Closer to the Heart and then stepping out in front of the mic to sing Tommy the Cat, the Primus song, as the character of Butters on from South Park. And, you know, just his creativity and talent and Trey Parker as well. Is on full display. And then, of course, you get these shots of the audience just, you know, keeling over in laughter or just total shock on their faces. And then these aerial views of Red Rocks, which is just gorgeous and has all of these, you know, projections of different South Park related characters and happenings. And I mean, the FOMO is very real in that regard. And I just thought, you know, it was worth mentioning. Ween announced some Halloween shows. They're going to be playing October 31st and November 1st at the Beacon Theater in New York, and will lead up to those shows with two nights at the New Roadrunner in Boston, Massachusetts. You know, these bands, Primus and Ween, I don't know, have such an importance to the whole South Park thing. And it was just really, everything was on full display at Red Rocks. And I'm just very glad that there's pro shot video that you can watch of these because, I mean, what a moment.
Beyond, right? I mean, insane. If, to all you who were there, I'm jealous. I salute you. And I think that, Isaac, really brings us to the end of our road here. What a beautiful time to talk about all the live music happenings, everything, everywhere, transatlantic, We're talking Canada, we're talking Iceland, we're talking South Park, we're talking Trey, we're talking Goose, etc., etc. What an amazing thing. Oh man, this podcast is brought to you by Osiris Media. Shout out to our friend Brian Brinkman, RJB, and our producer is Marlo Shankweiler. She stitches this whole thing together.
Crunk
we
Marlo.
Are so lucky to have Crunk Marlo in the cut. Fantastic times, everybody. We hope you have an amazing week ahead. Can't wait to keep it going. No weeks off, baby. We don't take Labor Day off. That ain't even a thing. Not that it's Labor Day yet, but, you know. Good times, spectacular shows, music, humor, Rage Against the Motherfucking Machine. Isaac, thank you so much.
Karina, thank you too. The dog days are over. There it is.
Dog days are over. Dude, that's what the song's about. Take care, everybody. Stay cool.
Stay cool.
Stay hot.
Osiris.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers, think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like this.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.